This is internationally best-selling indie author Michael Brent Collings, inviting you to join me at bestsellerlife.com/DCR to unlock my tips, tricks, and hacks for a successful writing career. So go to bestsellerlife.com/DCR and kickstart your writing adventure today.
This is Daniel.
And this is Krebs.
This is Alton.
And I am Matai.
And you're listening to Dungeon Crawlers Radio, the greatest geek podcast out there.
All right, everyone, welcome to another exciting interview here from Dragonsteel. That's right, we are still here interviewing wonderful authors, and we're bringing another great author that's been on the show before, Ramon Terrell.
Hello, everybody.
Thanks for taking the time out of this con to talk with us. So you have a lot of fun books out here on your table. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk about the books.
Okay, well, I am an author and an actor, and for the purposes here, I'm an author.
Yeah.
And I've been writing for more years than I even want to mention.
That's
probably
okay.
Somewhere between 10 and 15. I write primarily epic fantasy with fantasy humor as well, and I have an urban fantasy quadrilogy that's been finished.
Nice.
And we're actually working on the film adaptation for the urban fantasy called Hunter's Moon, so we'll see how that
nice.
Goes. And my most recent book is Shadowlancer.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about Shadowlancer.
Okay, so it started off as a Kickstarter, which it started doing pretty well, and then Brandon endorsed it.
And then it did better.
Yeah. For anyone listening, if you ever heard high-pitched screaming anywhere in the world where you are, that would have been me.
Nice, so, nice.
Brandon seems to have some magic when it comes to Kickstarter.
Oh, my gosh.
Just a little bit.
You know, anytime you get that stamp of approval by Brandon, it just seems like everything goes through the roof.
Through the
which
roof.
Which is amazing. So, you know, you have this wonderful cover of this individual holding a sword in what I would assume is like this Sahara Desert-type scene. So is there kind of a desert theme to the story? Tell us a little bit about that.
No, you just nailed it.
Okay.
Like, yeah, loosely based on the Sahara Desert for the environment. And it takes place in the desert. There's two regions that are spotlighted primarily in this book. The north, which is called Dorhagen, which they're it's like a really harsh, snowy, always cold environment. Whereas in the south, where it's the desert, is called Samhar. And it's harsh in a different way because it's very hot.
You know?
And then at nighttime, it's very cold.
Yes.
So things like that. And they approach the magic. The magic's called the stream, and they approach it differently. In Dorhagen, they're called lancers. They pierce the stream, and they draw the magic out.
Okay.
And their movements with the magic are more reserved and conservative because you don't want to be using flowing motions because it's cold, right?
Okay, yeah.
Whereas in Samhar, they're called stream dancers because they touch the stream, draw the magic out, and they manipulate it through dance, sweeping motions.
Interesting.
Like that.
Very nice.
I'm detecting some echoes of Wheel of Time, Sidar and Sidine.
A little bit like that. A little bit like that. Yeah, it's two different approaches. Well, it's two different approaches to it, more so than the nature of it. From the masculine and feminine, even though Sidin was one at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sidar. Sidar was one at one time, and then they kind of broke off, right? Or was it always two? I'm trying to remember.
It was the creator's power, which turns the wheel of time because they're opposing forces.
Oh, yes.
And so that conflict between two different approaches or philosophies to using magical power probably creates wonderful opportunities in your book, too, for the conflict or the contrast. Like they say, you can't see anything unless it's contrasted against something.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Different shades of white are all white, but you put some gray or some black in there, and all of a sudden the nuances jump out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, do you... What are some of the... I guess what I'm asking is, what are some of the themes in your book? Because I can just... I'm just imagining some amazing creative ways that those two different approaches to power can play out in a book. So what theme are you getting at?
So the theme for this one is redemption and self-forgiveness. Because this character has a thing that happened in her past, and she's dealing with that guilt, and she has lived her life in a way that's almost like a penance for what happened in her life previously. And throughout this book, her arc is basically about, you know, coming to forgive herself for something that happened in her past that wasn't necessarily intentional, but it's just, you know, learning forgiveness. And then she learns this through the characters that she meets along the way and the relationships that she forms with these people who she reluctantly becomes friends with. Because, I mean, the guilt is so strong, she doesn't even feel like friendship is something that she should have, you know?
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it's... And there's an aspect of the magic system in this that I can't really talk about, but it's a part of her life, like, forever. And mm-hmm. Those who read Shadowlancer, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's all intertwined, the guilt and the side effect of the magic that she has to deal with for the rest of her life.
And it sounds like some interesting world building and character development.
Well, not only that, if you don't know what he just did, he just hooked you by saying, just giving enough information that now, and he's like, yeah, now you got to read it. You know, because if I give it away, if I give the magic sauce away, you know, no one's going to want it.
Spoil it.
Yeah.
Spoil it.
Yeah. So I love that. Again, the cover is stunning. How many books are in this series? Because I can see number one, which means there's more than one coming out.
Yeah, there's going to be... I haven't decided on a length yet because these books are going to be loosely linked.
Okay.
So there'll be multiple volumes, but I'm writing them in a way to where you can read them out of order. They're going to be standalones,
okay,
but linked together.
Linked together. Nice. Yeah. So you also mentioned you have other books. So I'm seeing these fairy books that are here. We also have the Unleashed, the Saga of Ruination.
Saga of Ruination.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about those books.
Okay. So the fairies is, it's like if you're familiar with like Robert Asprin or Terry Pratchett.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the sarcastic humor and just like,
I
you know,
that.
Just fey antics, lots of crazy stuff going on.
Yes.
Like some of the hilarious characters, they're just skirting just this side of insanity. Or
nice.
Just the other side of insanity in the most harmless way possible. Right?
I like that.
Most of the time.
Tinkerbell to the extreme.
Yeah, I mean, like imps and the goofiest demons you'll ever see in your life. Just like things like that.
Yeah.
Just hilarious stuff. And then the Saga of Ruination is more the sprawling epic. You know, think Wheel of Time or Stormlight Archive.
Okay.
Tons of characters, branching storylines, things like that. Intricate magic system.
So the one thing I really like, you know, and no one, you know, our listeners can't see this, but when you were talking about, you know, the fairies, your face just got this huge smile, man. It looked like you had lots of fun writing that. From the smile, like, oh my gosh, it's definitely something you got to read. You know, and the epic fantasy with multiple characters, did you find that hard? I mean, because, you know, when you have... You know, one or two characters, that's kind of hard to juggle. But when you have an epic fantasy where there's so many, how do you keep that all straight?
Well, notes.
Notes.
Lots and lots of notes. And I'll create the characters and then I'll create their personalities, mm-hmm. their physical descriptions, things like that. And I'll just keep a catalog of it.
Okay.
And then, so that way when I'm coming to a character, especially when it's in a subsequent book,
yeah.
I'm like, what color was this person's eyes again? You know, and I can go back to my notes and I can look.
Yeah.
It's organized, right?
Nice.
Otherwise, there's just no way. It'll all fall apart immediately.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I just have to keep track of it via, you know, a catalog, so to speak.
So as a creative person, because you already mentioned you're an actor, how do you transition from doing the acting to the writing? You know, especially if you're doing it all in the same day.
Honestly, in a lot of ways, it kind of bleeds into each other.
Okay.
I have had days. I've literally had days where I was on set, and then we call it relaxing you, where it's like, okay, first team is relaxed, which means like you know, the main act, the actors can relax to the green room or their trailer until they need it on set again.
Okay.
And there's been times when I'll have several hours between times when I'm on set. So I'll go to my room in the trailer and knock out like 1,000 words or 500 words
nice.
Or something. And then they call me back and then I close the computer and then go back on set. So, and the character, the two professions bleed together because the characters, like when you're acting, you're telling another character's story.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like putting their outfit on, so to speak. You're wearing their jersey. You
okay.
know what I mean? So it's like, and then with writing, it's kind of the same thing. Like you're telling someone else's story, and you're kind of sitting in their shoes and dictating their story. So whereas in acting, I'm putting on their jersey and I'm physically telling the story mm-hmm. with my voice and then my, you know, my body, my yeah. actions, things like that. With writing, I'm telling their story by sitting in their shoes and dictating it.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's insightful. So we're here at Dragonsteel, a great convention for authors. How did you end up here?
Honestly, I got an invitation. It was Dan and Brandon, they invited me. And and then I was talking to Dan Wells, and he's like, yeah, do you think you'd like to come? And I'm like, oh, yeah, let me think about it. Yes, I would like to come.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you like to be here with Brandon?
Yeah.
Yes.
So is this your first year here?
This is my first year, yeah. I've been wanting to come, and then I've finally been able to come.
So what's your experience been like here this year?
Oh, I'm thrilled. It's been fantastic. Like, I say this. This has become my favorite show.
Nice.
Like, because it's, I mean, you know, the everything is here. The artists are here. The mm-hmm. games are here. But it's also a reader's con.
Yeah.
And just to see so many enthusiastic readers and, you know, no slight to shows that have the celebrities and everything, because that's all great.
Yeah.
I would like to be one day. Only for the work. You know, yeah. I don't need people to know me everywhere I go.
You are the celebrity here.
Yes.
I appreciate it. But yeah, it's nice to see the enthusiasm for the artists
yeah.
and the work and the writing and people who love to read, you mm-hmm. know? You can there are some shows where you just don't get that. So it's just
yeah,
it's
awesome. You know, and I know you've been at like Comic-Con, stuff like that, other conventions. And those are definitely a different feel, a different vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, because everything under the sun is for sale there. This is very author-centric. So, you know, you're connecting with your readers, which is probably fantastic. So where can our listeners that aren't here at the convention find you and your books?
Well, they can you can find me on social media, like on Twitter, which they've apparently called X now.
Yes.
Is Ramon_Terrell.
Okay.
On Twitter. And then Facebook, just look up Ramon Terrell.
Okay.
I have an author page, but also just a regular page. And for my books, anywhere online you can find them. If you go into a bookstore, they may or may not be stocked. You can just go up to the counter and they can usually order it for you.
Very nice.
Or my personal store, RamonTerrellBooks.com. And they can order ebooks and print. And also Discord. You can find me on Discord as well. Same thing, Ramon Terrell.
Very cool. Nice. So, folks, pick up a copy. These are beautiful books. And not only that, Ramon has the Brandon stamp of approval for Shadowlancer, which means you must pick it up. I'm just going to say that. So, thanks for your time, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much.
Hey, DCR fans. Do you ever dream of quitting your job to become a successful writer? This is internationally best-selling indie author and friend of Dungeon Crawlers Radio, Michael Brent Collings, inviting you to join me at bestsellerlife.com/DCR to unlock my tips, tricks, and hacks for a successful writing career. A portion of every sale at bestsellerlife.com/DCR goes to support Dungeon Crawlers Radio. And even better, another portion goes to charity. So go to bestsellerlife.com/DCR and kickstart your writing adventure today.
All right, Dungeon Crawlers, we are here with the one, the only, Isaac Stewart, Head of Creative Development at Dragonsteel. Hi, Isaac.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
It's good to see you all again.
You as well. So for our listeners who are kind of new to this, what is it that you do at Dragonsteel?
So at Dragonsteel, I'm the VP over Creative Development. Creative development is basically our fancy term for taking what Brandon writes and developing the intellectual property visually and into other forms of media. So we work with the products team mm-hmm. to design products. We work with outside licensees like Brotherwise to make sure that they are getting the vision from Brandon. We hire artists. To do art for covers, interiors of our leather-bound books, or the Secret Project books lately. So we are into all of the kind of the visual side of things and how Brandon's books are portrayed visually to people.
You mentioned the Secret Projects books, and that's kind of what I was thinking of when mm-hmm. you mentioned creative development, because the way they're put together from the the materials used in the book, but especially the illustrations, the art, the font faces. You earlier, before we were on the air, you were talking about two-color prints and the work that goes into that. And the Secret Project books are amazing examples of some of that artwork. What was that experience like?
So the Secret Projects were a ton of fun. We talked about the materials. I mean, there's the designer in me just loves to get the swatches and get to feel like, okay, that's the paper. Yeah, okay, we're going to pick this paper because it feels this way. And so down to even the tactile experience of what does the cover feel like? How does it feel when it's embossed? What is the foil going to be like? Which artist should we have that whose style fits this book? Contacting them, working with them we try to, on these books, let the artists have a lot of leeway in the design. So like Howard Lyon, I we're like, hey Howard, this is how I design a book. Now, let's let you put your fingerprints all over this. How would you design this chapter icon? What would you do by the number? And that's how, chatting with Howard and brainstorming things, that's how we came up with a spoiler. There's something partway through Tress where we change the inks in the middle of it, and it has like a story feel, a story reason behind it. So each book was individual in the experience that we had because each artist is different. But each time it was just fantastic working with all the artists.
And speaking of Tress, each one of the chapter headings had a little color graphic that grew and changed depending on which section of the book you were in.
Right, exactly.
And it's just these little kind of touches like that that make the book just an amazing experience to read. I mean, there's always this argument over ebooks versus books you can hold, hard copy books. And the Secret Projects, to me, make one of the most solid arguments for paper over electrons.
I agree with that. But I also know that, you know, ebooks have their place, right?
They do.
It's like, that's so convenient to be carrying the books around, but it doesn't replace this idea of finding a spot where you can sit down with a book, have that feel of the book in your hands. And not only that, but we make sure we're not skimping on page numbers, right? We want a comfortable reading experience. We don't want to have type that's too small. We don't want type that's too big. We don't want it spaced too far apart. We want it to be this just a reading experience that presents Brandon's words in a way that the actual words don't get in the way, if that makes sense, the layout of the
It does.
Words. And that involves a ton of us. That involves editorial, like Peter and Christy Gilbert over in layout, and we all work together on trying to find a typeface that works. And with Tress, I'd been wanting to use a typeface called Doves for years. And finally, we got to use it in that because I kind of had this sort of classic fairy tale feel to it. I almost used it in Warbreaker Leatherbound, but that typeface has an incredible story behind it, where two members of the Doves book binding house in England around the turn of the century, these two members of it got into a fight over who owned the business. Their families were involved, all these different things, and one of the guys, his last name was Sanderson Cobden, would smuggle out the typeface late at night and dump it in the river. And so little by little, he destroyed this typeface. So that when his partner took over the company for legal reasons, he got in there and the typeface was gone and he could not print books with it anymore. Anyway, a British typophile went and traced this guy's steps on the River Thames to the spot where he thought that he had dropped all the typeface. And then he hired scuba divers to go down there and see
and find
if
it
was it? There. And he found it.
Wow.
Oh,
and
my
so then
word.
He pulled that up and he reconstructed the typeface. And that we use that as Doves. And it's one of the most beautiful typefaces, I think, in the world.
Hmm.
And so we may use it on future books. But
that's amazing.
That's like the story behind the typeface that we used in Tress. And I love little historical details like that.
No, that is amazing.
These are only the kinds of stories you can get from the head of creative development.
Yes.
You know, you'd never hear this otherwise.
So what I also like is, besides the fact you're with Dragonsteel, but you also have your own stuff.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to talk about that. So monsters don't wear underpants. I mean, obviously, that's going to intrigue you just from the title.
Yeah.
Where did this amazing idea come from?
First, the title there made me think it was a kid's book.
Yeah.
But then the subtitle is a Lift the Flap book, which immediately changes it to a horror novel in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no,
certainly
no.
Something that, you know, should be out at Halloween in the very least. So this came about because my daughter, when she was younger, I can't remember the exact situation, but she would walk around with this monster voice, and we thought it was really funny. But one night, I'm like, you need to go take a bath, and you got to remember to put on underpants. And she said, but Daddy, monsters don't wear underpants. And I'm like, that is a brilliant title. And it just, like, some of the stuff flowed right into my head.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have to write this picture book. So over the next few years, I wrote it. I worked with my agent on making it just right. And
yes.
Eventually, it did have a publisher for a while. That didn't work out. Then we kickstarted it. And so we still have copies. It's for sale on Brandon's website.
Nice.
Monsters Don't Wear Underpants, a Lift the Flap book. And I promise you, it's not as scary as it sounds. It is very tame. But I think kids and parents will love it.
No, it's a wonderful kids book, and I love the little stuffed animal you have going with it. It's just perfect. So, you know, and kids are the greatest inspirations. I mean,
that is the perfect
story. I mean, too bad you couldn't have recorded that to have that voice. So you have also, like, some sort of voice built into it.
I just have the memory.
So, but before we take off, because we've taken a lot of your time,
no, you're great.
You know, what is one thing that out of your entire experience, because I remember meeting you back when you were Brandon's assistant, you know, this whole creative journey you've gone on, what is something that is really just go, man, this has made this whole journey a wonderful experience?
So it really comes down to actually experiences like being at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how Brandon's work affects people emotionally. It gives them strength. It helps people be more robust in their own lives, being able to find the strength to move forward. So being able to talk to people and knowing their stories and knowing that Brandon's works and the way that we support them with art and other things is doing good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that affect people, that to me makes my job worth it. Because during the rest of the year, when you're just like, you're at the table and you're at the grind and you're doing the work, right? It's like, how is this, you know, sometimes it's hard to see that vision. But the vision is making the world a better place.
That's awesome.
Helping people connect over something fun. And so that, to me, that's the greatest thing that I find from this journey that we've had together is...
It's that ripple effect.
That ripple effect.
It's a little drop, and then it just gets bigger and bigger as it goes out.
I love being part of the fandom here. You know, it's to me, I'm just like, I get to come and meet with 5,000 friends that all love the same things that I do, and
that's awesome.
I just love it.
This is my last question for you. What has been the hardest project creatively that you've had to, that you've worked on, you've got to work on with Brandon?
What is the hardest one? So, The Way of Kings... I felt like that was really my... Oftentimes when you get a BFA degree, I have a BFA degree, Bachelor of Fine Arts, you have to have a capstone project.
Okay.
And somehow in getting that, I didn't really have a capstone project because of just the way that the degree worked and how it was being built at the university at the time. And so I felt like The Way of Kings wound up being my capstone project because I would go and I work all day at a video game company.
Yeah.
And then I would come home, be with the family, and then I would work till early hours in the morning on trying to break down the Way of Kings and making sure that the details were right and that it was going to have art that would support this great story that Brandon had brought into the world. And so those were so tired during those days, but building something cool. And I kind of see that as my, like, my capstone project.
That's amazing.
And it was a lot of hard work, but it has provided a great foundation for other things. So thanks for asking that question. Hopefully that was a good answer.
No, that was.
Are you referring to first edition or the leather-bound edition? Or
That first edition.
Okay.
That first edition.
The cover art blew me away on that.
Yeah.
The colors and everything. And I didn't know what I was looking at. And then when I read the novel,
Oh, the Michael Whalen painting on the front?
Yeah.
So I don't have, I can't take any credit for that particular
thing.
Well,
just the way it was all put together and picking all that artwork. I just, again, another example of a book that's well put together.
Yeah, I agree. That is an amazing painting.
Yeah.
And it's just become a capstone. I've used the word capstone. So Michael Whalen, they asked him, there was the Norman Rockwell exhibit back east, said, we're doing this fantasy and science fiction art exhibit that kind of coalesces, is trying to bring together art from the last 10, 20 years that encapsulates fantasy and science fiction.
Yeah.
What do you want to have in it? And he said, the Way of Kings. Can you contact Brandon and make sure that we have that in there? That is one of the pieces I'm most proud of the last decade. And that floored us. We love Michael. We love his work. But we completely agree. It's become such an iconic piece.
Yeah.
Sorry, so many stories. I'll just sit and tell you.
We love it. So we got to go because you have a line. We want to respect your time. But thanks giving us the time.
Appreciate seeing you guys again.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yeah, and if you guys have not picked up a copy for your kids, definitely pick up Monsters Don't Wear Underpants. And we'll catch you next time.
All right, we appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find us.